You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we reflect on Governor Evers' State of the State address last night and the Republican response. Now, the House of Representatives today, including 10 Republicans, voted to impeach President Donald Trump for a second time.
On this vote, the ayes are 232, the nays are 197. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
As House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing the vote tally earlier this afternoon, you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this new impeachment of the president? Would you like to have seen Congress take more time? What do you want to see from the U.S. Senate? Majority Leader Mitch McConnell basically put the lid on any idea of doing anything before Inauguration Day. Do you think it should happen sooner? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and chair of the Department of History, Political Science, and Religious Studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on today, Rob.
Well, a dramatic week here, Lily. The attack on the Capitol just 1 week ago today, now an impeachment from the House. Your thoughts, big picture, take it where you want to go.
It's just been a kind of unimaginable on some level that we saw what we saw last Wednesday. And then we have the second impeachment of a president, which again is historical. We've only had the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and Donald Trump's first impeachment in the history of presidential impeachments in the United States. And next Wednesday, we will have an inauguration that apparently is also kind of under threat with regard to concerns about attacks on the event itself and those who are there. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and as somebody who studies American politics, it's a bit wild.
Impeachment, it happened in the House today, the Senate trial. It seems pretty clear at this point won't happen until after Inauguration Day. What is the meaning of a Senate impeachment trial of a president who's already left office the normal way?
Again, this is somewhat unprecedented, but then so is being impeached twice as president. I'm given to understand from what I've been hearing in the news media and some reading that other individuals have been impeached or tried after they had left office, not obviously as president. So the Senate trial of Donald Trump as former president will definitely be something new and different, at the same time that the Biden administration is hoping to be able to move some of their appointees through the Senate so that they can take over, you know, the Department of the Treasury and Health and Human Services as we are in the middle of the pandemic and we have a significant recession. So there's a lot of pressure with regard to what the Senate will be doing, not only after the inauguration with regard to a new cabinet and sub-cabinet level appointments, but also with regard to managing another impeachment trial.
Now, we saw unanimous support for impeachment from Democrats, a wide variety of approaches from Republicans. Let's start with the 10, first of all, who voted in favor of impeachment. I want to read a quote from Liz Cheney here, representative from Wyoming, a third highest powered member of the House for Republicans. And I'm going to quote from her statement. She didn't say this on the floor. Quoting, "The president of the United States summoned this mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. Everything that followed was his doing. None of this would have happened without the president. The president could have immediately and forcefully intervened to stop the violence. He did not. There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath to the Constitution." Again, that's Republican Representative Liz Cheney. Striking to hear that from somebody of the president's own party.
Yeah. And again, it's really interesting. You just read a section that, in fact, the majority leader in the House, Steny Hoyer, also read at the floor on the floor of the House, quoting Liz Cheney in the concluding remarks before the vote was called. And so, you know, sort of piece some of these parts together, Liz Cheney's father, the former Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, and also Vice President, had spent a number of years in the House as a House member. And he was one of the Secretaries of Defense who signed an op-ed, a letter last week, talking about what had happened in the Capitol and also supporting the removal of Donald Trump. And so, you know, I think that Liz Cheney is, you know, sort of thinking about not only her own experience in the House last week, all of the members who were there were experiencing the, you know, the attack, but also, you know, probably coming out of some of her father's own experiences, not only as Secretary of Defense and Vice President, as well as his time in the House and the immediate post 9/11 period.
We are talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University, looking at today's impeachment vote in the House. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this vote in the House to impeach the president? Good idea, bad idea? Would you like to see the Senate pick up a trial sooner rather than later? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Of course, most Republicans voted against the motion to impeach Lily. Some, including some of Wisconsin's delegation, did assign some blame to the president for the events, but said, hey, we've got this transition coming. Some more forcefully defended the president. What did you make of what we heard from Republicans who voted no on impeachment?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of different approaches, and part of the argument is that he's going to be out of office a week from now. And so, you know, we should move on from the situation. The difficulty, obviously, is that when there is essentially a group of people who storm the Capitol building, and it's becoming more and more clear from everything that I'm reading that there was real attempts at threatening and getting to Vice President Pence, Speaker Pelosi, and others with the potential for, you know, sort of taking them hostage or worse, that this is a, you know, it's a complicated sort of approach. At the same time, impeachment is the mechanism in the Constitution to punish a president. And that's what it is. It's a political means. And a number of the Republicans who spoke against impeachment and voted against impeachment basically said that the insurrection is over and we need to move on.
Let's look back at the lead up to this. We're basically 2 months past the time on November 7th when we knew that Joe Biden had won the presidential election. There were court cases, lots of them challenging bits and pieces here and there. It was clear at that time, continues to be clear. But we had this drumbeat from the president and some of his supporters saying the election was stolen. How important was that, Lily, you think, in leading up to last Wednesday's events?
Well, I mean, I think this is where you have the, you know, some of the connection between the rhetoric from somebody like a president of the United States, which, you know, has the bully pulpit, has the biggest megaphone in the world, even if not on Twitter, and the capacity to constantly push a narrative that is being shown again and again and again to not be true, it defies a kind of reality. And I think that's also where some of the supporters were who came to the Capitol last week to try to overturn the certification of the Electoral College votes, because that was what the argument was that the certification was essentially an illegitimate process because that was not what happened according to what President Trump had said.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Dave is with us in Nakusa. Dave, hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Dave?
When you were talking about should we go through with this and impeach him, and I was kind of against it at first, but I just don't want to see this being made first priority. after Biden gets into office. We've got enough eggs on our plate right now. There's so much going on. And, you know, if they want to go after him later, and I understand they're trying to just, you know, make him pay for, you know, what he instigated. But I just think we, if they go through with it, just back off on it, and we get to it when we get to it.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. And Lily, I've seen other people, even as Dave was, people sympathetic the idea of impeaching the current president, saying, hey, President Biden's got, you know, COVID and vaccination and mending fences in foreign policy and his appointments. A list, we could talk for a half hour about the list. Does the impeachment, if it's still going, get in the way of all that?
Well, I think this is, you know, this is a tricky sort of situation. And as I said, there's a lot of pressure on the Senate moving forward with regard to many of the tasks that it has at the beginning of a new administration, coupled with the complexity of what's going on in terms of the pandemic and the recession and, as you say, global relations and so forth. And James Clyburn had suggested perhaps the trial should take place a little bit longer down the line, after the, you know, most of the components of the new administration had been put through the Senate. I think, though, that the House will transmit the articles quite quickly. You know, how and when the Senate takes them up, I guess, will be up to the Senate. And then there is some question about whether or not, because the impeachment vote and process happened so quickly in the House, you know, that in order to sort of respond appropriately, the Senate should, you know, pick this up quickly and get through it quickly, as opposed to having it also take a long time to try.
Thanks for that call, Dave. We're talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University, looking at today's impeachment vote in the U.S. House. You can join in with your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this impeachment vote? When and how would you like to see the Senate deal with it for a trial? And how are you doing this week when you look at American politics over all the things that have happened? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Lily Gorin stays with us from Carroll University, political scientist there. We are looking at today's impeachment vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. It passed, goes to the Senate. When? Not clear. Probably not between now and Inauguration Day. President Trump released a written statement, a press release earlier today. He now has a video statement out. Here is a little bit of what he had to say just in the last 20 minutes or so.
Every American deserves to have their voice heard in a respectful and peaceful way. That is your First Amendment right. But I cannot emphasize that there must be no violence, no lawbreaking, and no vandalism of any kind. Everyone must follow our laws and obey the instructions of law enforcement.
I didn't see this in real time, Lily, because we're on the air now. Our producers say there was no mention of the impeachment itself. What do you think of that statement from the president as compared to what he was saying as things unfolded last Wednesday?
Well, he said something somewhat like that later in the day last Wednesday. But I, you know, again, I haven't heard the whole clip or the whole discussion, so I don't know what else he has to say there. I mean, he's said this before. At the same time, this is fairly distinct from what he said in Texas. Was it yesterday or Monday? And it's also somewhat distinct from what he said speaking to the crowd last Wednesday before all of the attacks on the Capitol.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Bethany is with us in West Bend. Bethany, hi.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking my call. I just have so many things that I want to say with regard to this. But my first question is, you know, if the impeachment process wouldn't have gone through or doesn't go through, what are the benefits that this president will have after he leaves office? I totally, any of us in any employment situation, none of this would be allowed And we cannot allow this behavior, and we cannot allow this to go on. And I do not feel that my hard-earned dollars in public education should be going to someone to provide their pension, provide lifelong health insurance, provide security and benefits for this person and their family.
I gotcha. Bethany, thanks for calling in. And Lily, there's been talk about what impeachment and successful impeachment would mean for some of those benefits Bethany was talking about. Also, whether there are moves that would make it so that the president couldn't run for president again, say, in 2024.
Yeah, and first of all, let's just clear this up. The president was impeached today, so that has happened. The House impeaches presidents or others. And so what happens now is whether the Senate will try him and convict him or acquit him. And so that's up to the Senate. So the historical component of today is that Donald Trump has now been impeached twice, the only president to have that experience. And the Senate can decide, were they to convict him, that, you know, they could preclude him from running for office again. And they could also decide, you know, again, what the potential other punishments might be in that regard. So what the Senate decides to do in terms of either convicting him or acquitting him can also have ramifications for his political future and so forth.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Sarah now in Milwaukee. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was actually going to say a lot of what was just said. I hear a lot of my friends saying, oh, this is only 20 more days of this, or how many more days of this? Let's just let it go. And I kind of rebutted with exactly everything that was just said. Like, I feel like this is so important to have it moved forward and have it voted on. Because this is going to go down in history. It is going down in history. It already is a historical event. And it needs to be correctly shown, reflected of what is currently happening in these times.
Sarah, thanks for the call. A little more about the symbolic value here, Lily.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was saying, is that, you know, Donald Trump now has the ignominious sort of fame of being the only president in our 250-year history of having been impeached not once, but twice. And again, whether or not the Senate convicts him, I have no idea. But that is kind of not necessarily a famous call to arms in terms of something that somebody wants next to their name as president of the United States. And we also had a long stretch of time. We had one president impeached, Andrew Johnson, following the Civil War. And then we went for quite some time without another impeachment. And then we've had quite a few, three formally, in the last, you know, sort of 30 years. And of course, Nixon was never impeached. He resigned before the vote was taken in the House. So historically, this is a unique situation in terms of having two impeachments within a year of each other for one president.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Kevin next in Monroe. Kevin, hi.
Yes. Hi there. Just in regards to impeachment, even though there was an impeachment done, he was still president for how long? And how much money did that cost the American taxpayers? And do we really want to be involved with impeaching him and fighting in court litigation again with our taxpayers' money? That's not what we want. That's not what I want as a small business owner.
Kevin, thanks for the call. Lily, Kevin worried about a waste of time, lawmakers' time and resources being spent on now two impeachments that, you know, didn't remove anyone from office.
Yeah. And I mean, again, we've had a number of impeachments of presidents that don't ultimately or haven't ultimately removed them from office. And, you know, the president will no longer be in office next Wednesday. But we also don't usually have people sort of storming the Capitol. And I guess that's where not only members of the House and possibly the Senate, but also many Americans find that they think that the president had a hand in that and that they don't want to see that go, I guess, unpunished.
Thanks for that call, Kevin. In our last couple minutes, Lily, let's turn from the impeachment and a Senate trial to, you know, something bad happened at the Capitol last week. What are you hoping to see when it comes to investigations of security and things like that so we figure out what went on and how to prevent it again?
Yeah, there's a lot of work that is going on by the FBI and by other law enforcement institutions with regard to kind of unpeeling the parts of what happened last week and if there was some collusion between members or staff members and some of the people who had schematics of the House. I'm really concerned about that. In terms of the real threat to elected officials.
We'll leave it there. Lily, thanks as always for joining us today.
Sure. It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We've been talking to Lily Gorin, professor of political science and chair of the Department of History, Political Science and Religious Studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. We talked to her today about the vote in the U.S. House of Representatives today to impeach Donald Trump for inciting an insurrection at the Capitol last week and where we go from here. Tune in tomorrow to the Ideas Network for more coverage on the morning show and here on Central Time. And you can keep sharing your thoughts. You can email ideas@WPR.org, post your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on the morning show, the Packers are getting ready for the first playoff game this weekend, hopefully well-rested after a well-deserved bye week. Kate Archer, Kent, and her guests look at the Packers' regular season run and whether they could go all the way. It's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Now, Governor Tony Evers gave his annual State of the State address virtually last night, dedicating his speech to the thousands of lives lost in Wisconsin to COVID-19 and highlighting policy goals. The governor announced he was calling a special session for the legislature to fix the state's decades-old system for processing unemployment claims. His administration blames the system for the backlog that kept some waiting months to get their checks.
The system isn't new, and these problems aren't either. And Republicans and Democrats alike are to blame.
Our next guest joins us to break down the speech and the Republican response delivered by Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you catch the governor's address and the Republican response? What did you think? Do you think there are areas where Republicans and Democrats could work together on policy issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Phil Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Always happy to be here, Rob.
Well, Phil, we've got a Democratic governor, a Republican legislature. They have not played well with each other on a variety of issues. Did you hear anything last night that says, hey, maybe there's some common ground where they can work together?
You know, I think the one thing that I heard in Governor Evers' speech that I think there probably would be some kind of common ground would likely be on the issue of rural broadband. You know, or broadband access in general. You'll notice there are certain issues that are brought up in the State of the State that are immediately talked about in the response, and some that are sort of glossed over or not talked about. The ones that are sort of glossed over, you can assume are either non-starters for the other side or generally points of agreement. And so if you look at the main issues that Governor Evers talked about, I think the one that stood out to me is likely that increase in broadband access.
We're going to hear from a couple state lawmakers over the course of this conversation, and let's bring one on now. Assembly Representative Jim Steinecke joins us, Republican representing Wisconsin's 5th Assembly District in the Kaukauna area, just north of Appleton. He is the Assembly Majority Leader. Representative Steinecke, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Well, your response in general to what we heard from the governor and from the assembly speaker last night.
Yeah, I mean, the governor's speech was a highly polished campaign commercial from what we could tell from the chambers with him not being there. I think the disappointing thing is he's been governor for 2 years and he's taken no responsibility for what's happened with unemployment. And in fact, the special session call is more of a deflection than anything, because we know, and our legislative fiscal bureau confirmed today, that he has every authority to do what he is proposing in this legislation all by himself with no legislative approval, and he has the money necessary to do it as well. So he doesn't even need a special session. He's calling a special session in order to deflect blame from the administration's lack of an ability to handle this crisis and their poor response to it. And it's just unfortunate.
What would you have liked to have seen from the governor early next year as those unemployment claims mounted during COVID-19?
We gave them a bunch of different ideas on how to fast track the claims, from expanding call center hours to moving more employees over faster, a whole host of different things that could have increased the response time for these claims. I mean, it is unconscionable that tens of thousands of Wisconsinites were waiting weeks and months for help from the state government. And there was very little sense of urgency coming from the administration. And only now, a year later, are they proposing changes that they could have done all by themselves all along.
Now, the governor and others have pointed to the old system, said Republicans who controlled state government for a long time could have fixed it, could have removed at least some of the roadblocks that caused trouble early on. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, it's more deflection. Other states use the same type of system that we have and didn't have near the issues that we had. I mean, if everything was going along swimmingly and there was no fault within the agency or the administration, why did he fire Caleb Frostman, who was heading up the agency? There was obviously problems there that they have not been willing to admit, and now this is more deflection. If he wants to do this, why wait for legislative approval? He can do it today.
Vaccine rollout has been, well, it's been a problem nationwide, some states worse than others. What would you have wanted to hear from the governor about vaccine plans here in the state for COVID-19?
What the actual plan is, because as far as we can tell, local health officials have been extremely frustrated with the administration over the course of the last 9 months because they're often the last to know what's going on, often hearing what the administration is doing, not from the administration itself, but rather from media reports when the administration announces something. So it's got to get better because we can't go down from here. We're 10th out of 12 Midwestern states in vaccine rollout efficiency. So we don't have, we can't drop much further. Hopefully, and we've asked the governor to be part of this process. Tommy Thompson at the UW system has also said that he could help, but we have been rebuffed at every opportunity that we have presented it, some help.
One bit of criticism pointed at the legislature and Republicans in it is you did a big package in March and not much since on COVID. What would you say to people who say, hey, you should have been back in session doing more?
Yeah, we did. Most people don't understand, and I can understand why they don't. The bill back in spring last year had dozens and dozens of items that the administration requested. The administration had unfettered access to over $2 billion from the federal government with no legislative oversight. So they had all the tools in the toolbox over the course of those months of 2020. In fact, the governor never asked us to come back and pass any specific policy item that he said he needed. So that's the thing that we were struggling with. Now, hopefully in the next few weeks, we'll be able to come together around a new COVID bill that will deliver some relief that's much needed. But I think it's a misnomer to say that, we didn't do enough last year.
And briefly, before I let you get back to your day, broadband, do you see that as a point where you and legislative Democrats and the governor can maybe work together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a priority of ours dating back to when Scott Walker was governor. Obviously, Governor Evers put some money into it, and we approved of that in the budget. And I don't see any reason why we would go backwards. It is a critical part of today's society and something that people need access to. And in too many cases, the private sector just can't do it on their own because the return on investment isn't there. So government needs to step in and help.
Representative Steinicke, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Representative Jim Steinicke, Republican from a district, the 5th District, just north of Appleton, Assembly Majority Leader. Phil Chen is still with us, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. the unemployment issue last year. Things didn't go well in Wisconsin, Phil. What do you make of the back and forth? The governor saying, hey, it's our antiquated system. Republican saying, hey, it's our governor.
You know, I think this is what you might expect when a major governmental system largely fails to do what it's supposed to do. And in all likelihood, it probably falls somewhere in the middle. This isn't my expertise isn't in the administration of unemployment systems. But if you look at the nonpartisan reports that have been put out, the blame probably rests in a number of places. It is clearly an outdated system, but there may have been things that could have been done earlier from the Evers administration as well. So, you know, I think you're going to see this kind of back and forth between the, you know, Republicans and Democrats on whose fault it is or what we need to do. But ultimately, I think the likelihood that something will change is still very high. It may not happen in the, you know, through the special session, but as Representative Steinicke was saying, it's possible that Governor Evers already has the authority to make some of those changes. So we're likely to see changes in the unemployment system. It's just a question of, you know, where people will attribute blame, or if it will be sort of in the weeds enough that people won't really understand whose fault it is.
I should say we'll also hear from a Democratic lawmaker in just a few minutes. Phil, this is a big year. You know, it's our budget year in Wisconsin. That's a big deal, probably the biggest thing the legislature does. Also, redistricting, how we draw our lines for the state legislature, another COVID-19 relief thing or effort, maybe fixing unemployment. Do you see our government being functional enough in a divided government situation to tackle those problems?
You know, it's one of those things where it's hard to see a bipartisan agreement on something like unemployment insurance, but that we are likely to see some kind of movement on that. I don't see really any means of compromise on something like redistricting. I think that almost certainly will go to the courts. I just don't see we haven't seen enough support among Republicans for, the processes that Governor Evers put in place. And I don't see Governor Evers ever acquiescing to, you know, a similarly drawn legislative map. So that I don't think there'll be any chance of a real compromise. But I do think that something like a second coronavirus relief bill, of course, you would think that Republicans and Democrats, the governor, the legislature want to find some kind of common ground. And so I think we may see them working together on something like that. Issues will kind of maybe be dealt with in more singular fashion rather than kind of one cohesive package.
We're talking to political scientist Phil Chen from Beloit College. We're looking at speeches made by Governor Evers and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss last night. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you put the blame for the unemployment insurance problems in Wisconsin last year during the COVID-19 outbreaks early and middle days? Are you frustrated by state government and its ability or lack of same to work together on key issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation here from another lawmaker coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about the State of the State address from the governor last night and the Republican response. Phil Chen stays with us from Beloit College. You can share your reactions at 800-642-1234. We heard from a Republican lawmaker earlier in the conversation. Earlier today, I also talked to Janet Buley, Democratic state senator who represents a big chunk of northwestern Wisconsin, including Superior, Ashland, and Rice Lake. She's the Senate Minority Leader. Senator Buley, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
First of all, your overall reactions to what you heard last night from the governor and from the assembly leader.
Well, first of all, you know, it was a different setup. No audience for the governor, and Representative Voss did have people in his room. But I would say overall, I got a sense from the governor of a new optimism. He seemed very dedicated, very organized, had very concrete things to talk about. And I'm very, very pleased with the things he had to say. This, of course, in just hours after the Senate passed the COVID bill. I was very, very pleased with the progress that was made by that and in getting it passed. Now, of course, it has to go to the Assembly. So all in all, I was very pleased with the governor.
Getting into a couple particular issues, the governor wants lawmakers to meet next week to work on fixing the state's unemployment insurance system. We all know about the problems this year. He blamed outdated technology. Republicans and others have said, well, the governor did not take enough leadership on this issue. What are your thoughts on the unemployment system and how it functioned in 2020?
Well, I think that, you know, so many different examinations of DWD have taken place. I'm on the audit committee. It had a full and complete audit, and some recommendations were made, but it did show that we are up to date, or at that time we were. I do know that the system is outdated, horribly so. What kind of personnel changes or different things could be made is all in the rearview mirror, because, of course, in the time of COVID, we can never say that so many things were up in the air. So many things were totally unpredicted. I am very glad now, though, that we are going to start from scratch and give the DWD the hardware, the software, the platform that it is going to need in order to meet the needs of the people in Wisconsin who are unemployed.
Another critique of the governor from Republicans, and again some others, is a lack of a sense of urgency and of transparency, both with unemployment and now with vaccine distribution. Are there things you'd like to see from the Evers administration that we haven't seen so far?
Well, I know that the two things that you've mentioned, Evers was completely transparent about unemployment. There was a graphic about, you know, what the numbers were posted all the time. And when it comes to the vaccine, it is pretty much because the governors don't know across the country. The numbers of vaccine that are supposed to be delivered either don't come, or when they do come, they're in inadequate amounts. I know that the states are responsible for the distribution, but if you can't fix a supply chain error above you, it affects everybody beneath it. And the supply chain break comes from Washington, D.C.
The governor also talked about broadband access, an important issue I know in your part of the state and many others. Do you see this as a problem that both sides of the aisle could actually work together on?
I do, and I do because I think that COVID has completely exposed just how critical access to the internet is, not only for things like access to telemedicine or filing for unemployment, but basic information. People use the internet. Imagine, if you will, that you couldn't use Google ever. You know, we use the internet as at providing information and education. Countless commercials, notices in the paper all say, go to www. And then fill in the blank, and that's where you're going to get your information. And if you don't have the internet, all of these resources you cannot access. And so I think that, and not to mention the abject loneliness of people who don't have Zoom or any of the ability to work from home or visit from home. It's an unequal state when it comes to what I think is basic infrastructure. We are now at the point that broadband is infrastructure, just like roads and electricity.
Senator Buley, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. I'll come back anytime.
State Senator Janet Buley, Democrat. We're talking about the State of the State address last night and the Republican response. Phil Chen stays with us from Beloit College. Let's bring on a caller. John is with us in Eau Claire. John, hello.
Hey, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. When you're faced with a crisis we have been in 2020 with COVID, both to our health and our economy, and I'm by the way, I'm an independent voter, so this isn't partisan, but my wife's a critical care nurse, and I know how bad this has been. I hear about it every day when she comes home from work. When you're in a crisis, you've got to work together, and I've been
John, you're breaking up. I think we take your point, Phil. John, disappointed that there was a lack of cooperation, a lack of coming together during a crisis.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly common, I think, feeling, is that they're really, at both the national level, at many of the state levels, there just simply wasn't a lot of common ground to be found in how to address this crisis. That being said, I think a lot of it comes down to the way that elites in both parties presented information, who perhaps thought the pandemic early on was a very important problem, who sort of downplayed it, and how that trickled down into their voters. And so I think that while I take the point, and I think a lot of people are disappointed, a lot of it does sort of trace back to how the pandemic was originally talked about and originally framed, and even continuing from there.
Do you see, Phil, any signs that we're getting through that polarization in response to COVID-19, seeing a shared response? And I shouldn't over-exaggerate. A lot of people are wearing masks. A lot of people are, you know, taking this thing seriously. But do you see more common ground emerging now or in the near future?
You know, I think that the vaccine in some ways may, you know, fingers crossed, lead to a little bit more of a discussion around some of this, because there is sort of an end point in sight, right? I think that people were really worried. You know, we saw a lot of reactions from Republicans saying, well, you can't just shut down the economy, and then Democrats saying, well, you can't solve the coronavirus pandemic without some of these more restrictive measures. Now that there's kind of a sort of tentative endpoint in sight, you might see a little bit more agreement. Again, though, a lot of that is a lot of the beliefs are already baked in. A lot of the opinions are set based on prior beliefs. And so it does make it very difficult, but you might see a little bit more of that now that we have, you know, the summer to look forward to, saying June, July, when we're hearing maybe there will be sort of widespread vaccinations.
Phil, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Phil Chen is assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. We talked to him about the takeaways from Governor Tony Evers' state address last night, as well as the Republican response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Twitter banned the president's personal account. A social media expert shares thoughts on that decision, and you can tell us what you think about it. President Trump has had a huge impact on the Republican Party. Will it last? We'll look at the future of the GOP after Donald Trump leaves the White House. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.